At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Filmcast, a podcast about movies. I'm David Chen, and today we're reviewing Wicked for Good, or as they call it where I'm from in Boston, Wicked for Good.
You're in Boston?
Wow.
Where I'm from, I said. You know,
oh, where you're from.
Yeah, yeah. Literally across the ocean from Boston.
Terrible, terrible Boston accent there. Joining me today is Devinder Hardawar.
Wicked for Good. A tad presumptuous, don't you say? Really calling your shot with that title.
And Jeff Cannata.
I was confused about this movie, so I went to Wikipedia and I looked it up, and somebody had messed with it. It was so crazy, and yet I still got all the information I was looking for, which means that Wicked's Wacky Wiki worked.
Long walk.
That one.
Long walk for that one. I'm not
the
sure
remake of the long walk over here.
Yeah. Not sure it was worth it. I thought you hated the long walk, Jeff.
He had to remake it. He had to make it his memory. Own.
Yeah, he made it his own.
I came up with that about 4 seconds ago. By
wow,
the way.
Off the dome. Those are vague and oblique references to the fact that today on the podcast we're going to be reviewing Wicked for Good. Which, by the way, I don't know if you guys saw, has annihilated box office records, made like $150 million this last weekend. The people love Wicked, or more accurately, women love Wicked because they made up the majority of the audience. Apparently, men were only like 30% of the audience for this one. So
there was a lot of excitement at the screening I was at. People were dressed up.
Nice.
It was a whole thing.
Nice. Well, today on the show, we are going to get to a few emails and comments in response to our last episode. We got some great what we've been watching for you, some weekly plugs, and then our featured review of Wicked for Good. But first, folks, this is the last main episode that we're going to do before Thanksgiving. And I just want to give a big shout out to not only our listeners, but to Jeff and Devendra, who I got to say, have rolled with my recent major life changes with a lot of grace and patience and understanding. So this week, just want to say we are grateful for you, our listeners, for your support and for helping to keep this podcast going. And I'm just expressing my personal gratitude for Jeff and Devendra, because when you hear that your co-host is moving to Portugal, most people might react poorly to that, or at least with alarm. But Devendra and Jeff have been really understanding and trying to make it work. So
we're just living vicariously through you, man. That's how it is.
I also contained all of my alarm. I did not make it public.
All right.
Masks and cover-ups. That's what it is.
I do want to mention, by the way, that next week on the podcast, we are planning to review Train Dreams as our main review. And Hamnet, going to be our After Dark. That movie's going to be on limited release. We will be having an After Dark on Hamnet, I should say, Chloe Zhao's new movie. So you can look forward to those next week on the podcast. But just wanted to let people know, because we're entering the time of year, people are probably going to be curious like what we're going to be reviewing each week. We'll try to give people a heads up. So
Hamnet, of course, How I Catch My Pork.
Okay.
Just a little Thanksgiving tip if you want to have ham, you know.
Not bad.
That's how how you get the overzealous actors, put them in prison. You need a ham then.
Yes.
Too much. You're giving too much.
That's how I catch my Jeff Cannatas.
What?
With a ham net.
Wow.
How dare you.
Low blow.
All right. We talked last week a little bit about Eddie Murphy in my conversation about seeing his new documentary, Being Eddie, on Netflix. And I posited, you know, maybe there's just not that many actors out there who have done the same amount of stuff, the wide range of diverse roles as Eddie Murphy. Of course, a lot of people did write in to say how wrong I was about that. David C., not me, from Australia, wrote in. In talking about the Eddie Murphy film, you asked who has as broad a range of films. Coming up with people on the spot like that is difficult. However, the actor who first came to mind for me as a person with a more broad range is Robin Williams. Disturbing in 1 Hour Photo and Insomnia, hilarious in so many films, sage in Dead Poets Society, damaged in World's Greatest Dad, truly one of the acting greats, end quote.
It has to be a comedian. The comedians tend to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is tends to be true. People saying Jim Carrey.
Carrey was another big one on the Patreon. Aaron P. on the Patreon wrote in, Jim Carrey, Will Ferrell, Jamie Foxx, Steve Carell, Whoopi Goldberg, Bill Murray as well. As
and of those, like, I think Jamie Foxx is like the greatest actor of the bunch too. I go on about Jamie Foxx. I think that dude has always been tremendous, was always a better actor than Will Smith, deserved those flowers earlier on.
Steve Carell also kind of an interesting choice. I mean, like, he started as a comedian and then really tried to go hard into the dramatic roles to very mixed results, in my opinion. But yeah, I would say Jim Carrey and Robin Williams also definitely up there in terms of.
Robin Williams Whoopi Goldberg's a great action movie.
Yeah, Whoopi Goldberg, very good as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Whoopi's great.
Sister Act, man. I loved watching
classic,
this as a kid.
Classic.
In theaters.
Sister Act 2.
Amazing.
Yeah, but then like The Color Purple, you know?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
She's got, it's a lot.
But also
range.
She could be like, I want to be in Star Trek, you know? Right? And they put her in Star Trek.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
She was the linchpin of Star Trek Generations, which I remember seeing in theaters. Very fond memories about that film. Mm-hmm. Anyway. Thank you so much for your messages regarding that topic.
Did you guys, speaking of Star Trek, if I may. Tangent, just briefly.
I saw that news. Yeah.
Did you see the Lego Star Trek, the Lego Enterprise, Dave?
Oh, they announced? Shit. No.
It's like a premiere edition Lego Enterprise. It's so sick. It's $400.
It looks pretty good.
The disc detaches like in the movie.
Right. Yeah.
So badass. Oh, my gosh. It
looks
so sick.
I mean, that looks pretty cool. Like, we talked on an After Dark recently about the Lego Death Star and how we were fairly disappointed in that one.
Yeah.
But this
one's a home run, man.
This one looks really cool.
This Lego Death Star is not destroying any planets. Come on.
It's specifically the next generation Enterprise.
Yes.
That's cool.
There was a time when I could have told you what that call sign was, but not anymore.
Did you guys hear the news about the next Star Trek movie?
Mm-mm.
You know what's up? The John Francis Daly, Jonathan Goldstein, the guys behind Dungeons and Dragons are writing one.
Nice.
That is cool. Like, it's not going to be the Kelvin timeline. It's going to be like something else,
right.
But that's exciting. That's interesting.
That is exciting. They did a great job with that Dungeons and Dragons movie. Also, I got to say, I'm excited a little bit for Starfleet Academy. New TV show.
Oh, yeah, I've heard good things.
Starring Paul Giamatti. So that could be cool.
Those shows have been pretty good. Like, there's things people don't talk about. People didn't really talk about Star Trek Prodigy very much, but I think that was a lot of fun for kids.
Yeah, the show's been pretty good. Lower Decks, very, very beloved.
Lower Decks, fantastic.
Right? So, anyway.
Strange New Worlds, good stuff, yeah.
So we got emails at /filmcast@gmail.com. We also got this message from Cody Lee, who writes into patreon.com/filmpodcast. One of our patrons over there, thank you. During the episode, while talking about the Baltimoreans having a long discussion about improv and movies being largely negatively portrayed, I am surprised Mike Birbiglia's Don't Think Twice wasn't mentioned. Mm. Such a great movie. Its portrayal of improv is full of heart. In the film, the improv troupe is a found family dealing with the successes and failures life throws at all of us. Jeff is at least correct that it is few and far between, but Don't Think Twice is a great example of improv portrayed well in film. If anyone hasn't seen it, I highly recommend, end quote. Yeah, I should have brought this up, Jeff, but I think you've seen it as well. Great film. Love that movie. And a very respectable depiction of improv, I thought. Yes?
Yeah, but I think most of the time improv in context of a narrative is the butt of a joke.
I think that's right. You know? I think that's right. Anyway. The exception that proves the rule. So,
Which is not what that actually means, but go ahead.
What does it mean then, Jeff?
The verb prove in that idiom means tests. It doesn't mean shows it to be true. It means it tests it.
Interesting. It okay,
why that rule has exists?
To test the rule. Yeah. Does this rule hold up under scrutiny? Is what it means, and people misuse.
Interesting. Okay. No. That's good. I want to. You know. That's I never knew that. This is also like feels like a kind of like begging the question type thing. People use begging the question like raise the question when in fact it's not that, right?
So right.
I'm always appreciative of the pedantry, being completely sincere, because I like to use.
That's where you and I are very similar. David.
That's why we are simpatico, as they say.
And after this class, after I use this podcast, Dave will. It's 10 lashes for Dave for being wrong about the phrase.
That's why Dave and I never disagree.
Yes, we never disagree on anything. All right, guys. Let's get to what we've been watching this week. Thanks for all the messages at slashfilmcast@gmail.com or at patreon.com/filmpodcast. But it's time for what we've been watching. I had a chance to see Sisu Road to Revenge, or as it was called in the theater I went to, Sisu Estrada da Vincenza. Wait, I got that completely
nailed
wrong.
It. Fitting in your new location seamlessly, Dave.
Estrada da Vincenza.
Wait, is he a natural born citizen here?
Fuck you, Jeff.
Also, we should only be calling this movie Cease 2. Come on.
Cease 2.
Cease 2.
Yeah.
And anyway. Then the third one will be Three Sue.
I saw Sisu Road to Revenge. I did a double header, actually. I did Wicked for Good and then in.
It's a lot of movies.
Just as the filmmakers intended.
Just as the filmmakers intended.
Well, you needed something to like wake you up after Wicked for Good, right? You needed a kick in the pants. Yeah.
I gotta say,
honestly, Wicked could have been called Road to Revenge too.
Absolutely, absolutely. A lot of that going on. Okay, here's my analogy, and let's see if you both agree with it. If Inglourious Basterds is this genre's Grand Theft Auto, then Sisu is this genre's Saints Row.
You know what?
Sure,
I like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Inglourious Basterds is to Grand Theft Auto as Sisu is to Saints Row. That works for me. That's SAT question I can get behind.
That's right.
I conceptually get it, even though they're very, very different movies. I don't think there was never like dramatic dialogue in Sisu. It was dramatic head punching and like grenade throwing, right? It's very different.
Right, right. And so what I mean by that is, for those who don't know, Grand Theft Auto is the most profitable game of all time. And there is a game series that's trying to be like Grand Theft Auto, but much more silly, much more goofy and wacky. It's called Saints Row. Unfortunately, the Saints Row franchise has seen better days.
Yeah.
I think it's dead.
Yeah, it's not in good shape right now. Whereas Grand Theft Auto is still very much alive. But
we'll see.
Let's see next year, 2026.
Maybe.
Anyway, so. That's kind of how I feel about Sisu, which you know we reviewed a couple of years ago on the podcast. I'm shocked that this movie actually got a sequel.
That's why.
Because it wasn't like the first movie was a massive success or anything, but I guess they figured out a way to keep costs down.
Well, I was going to say, it's probably because this movie costs like, you know, $10 million.
Right. Yeah. I mean, but it looks great. And by the way, there are these like chapters, right, that uses like similar text to how Tarantino, I'm not saying he's the first one that did it, but like that uses like similar text font to how Tarantino does chapters in his stuff. And it's very like Tarantino, I think, inspired in many ways.
I feel like Sisu is trying to be one of those movies Tarantino would love if he were younger and like obsessed over. Like it is a B movie, the sort of thing that he would always love and then try to turn into a thing with Kill Bill and Inglourious Bastard. So
yeah,
we're going kind of full circle.
Yeah. It's Grindhouse, man. It's like kind of a throwback to that.
I think there's a difference between what people think of as Grindhouse and what actually was Grindhouse. And I think literally the contrast between his Grindhouse movie and then Planet Terror is that like this is like the Planet Terror. Like whereas what Quentin Tarantino made was like, in my opinion, closer to like what that type of movie actually was.
Sure.
You know, this is more over the top. It's like Planet Terror and like it's over the top, it's cheesy, it's corny. And by the way, the chapters are extremely short. Like, it's like chapter one, the mission or whatever. And then literally 5 minutes
later. On a mission. Chapter two.
Chapter two. It reminds me of, you know, when you're a kid and you're reading a book, like Dan Brown's books or whatever, like that have like really, mm-hmm. really short chapters. So you feel like you've accomplished something even when you've only spent like 2 minutes reading something, right?
I don't even know the plot of Sees 2, but I can guess it. Somebody's like, hey, remember all those guys you killed? Somebody's really mad about that.
Very good, Devendra. Very
Bingo!
Good. I mean, I can tell you what the basic plot is, essentially.
Okay.
First of all, this movie takes place after the events of the first film. Okay.
And
the idea is, by the way, they tallied it up how many people he killed. It's about 300 dudes from the first movie. and he goes to his house at the beginning of this film, and his family is dead. The main character's family is dead.
Wait,
his wife and kids. His wife and kids are dead. No, they're not dead in the cabin. They're just, they have been killed during the war. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And
wait, can I ask a question before you move on? Spoilers for the end of the first Sisu. So skip ahead if you don't want to hear the end of the first Sisu. But didn't he end that movie as an extraordinarily wealthy person?
Yeah, that was the whole point.
Did he have all the gold?
Yeah. Well, this movie completely jettisons all that, as far as I can tell. Like,
he drank it all away.
It doesn't give a shit about any of that because he has gone into Soviet territory to see his old home. He's from Finland. He's a Finnish character, and he goes, and his family's gone, and he goes to his old cabin, and he's like, you know what? I'm bringing my family back home with me. So he literally dismantles his house by hand.
Nice.
Puts all the wood into the back of a truck, and he's like, I'm driving back home. Meanwhile, they get Stephen Lang out of prison. They're like, Stephen Lang, you're the guy that killed this guy's family.
That's how you know you're leveling up. When Stephen Lang is the name in your cast.
Yeah. Stephen Lang's got to be the biggest line item for this entire budget is Stephen Lang.
Absolutely. So they're like, Stephen Lang, you're going to go fix your mess. You're going to go kill this guy.
The guy from Don't Breathe versus the guy from Sisu. Two old guys were going to punch each other slowly.
Excuse me, Devendra. The guy from Avatars 1, 2, and 3, I think is what you're meaning to say there.
Sure.
But anyway, yes. So that's what the movie's about. Like, that all gets set up in the first 5 minutes.
Who's more grizzled?
Yeah. And there are, the movie is very, very silly. It's very fun. There are some seemingly really well done practical stunts in the film, but overall it's very goofy. It defies the laws of physics in many, many ways, just as the first one, but like in even more extreme ways. I don't want to spoil it because I want you to be surprised by how they do it, but like there's stuff in the movie that's just ridiculous, and stuff in the movie that like made me applaud a little bit in the theater I was with two other people. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. And it's ridiculous and it's over the top. And if you don't take it too seriously, I think you will have a really good time. So if you want to see some really gnarly kills, some really spectacular kills, some great explosions, and some 1940s era Soviets soldiers getting completely owned, then I think you will enjoy Sisu Road to Revenge, which is out in theaters right now. So
nice.
Definitely a palate cleanser after Wicked for Good. Let's take a break for a sponsor. We'll be back with more of what we've been watching right after this.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Devendra Hardwar, hit us up with something you've been watching.
Yeah, I've got a whole pile of screeners. And I actually have 1 week to go before I have to like come up with my
vote,
critics
right?
list. Yeah, my voting and stuff. So I'm powering through. A lot of the movies coming out right now. And the first one I jumped on is The Secret Agent, the next film from Kleber Mendoza Filho, the guy who directed Baccarat. Baccarat was my favorite movie of 2020. And this is him back in action. And I have to say, I think I love this man. I think I just love the way he makes movies. He is a former film critic turned director. And I love those people. You know, and that goes back to like Truffaut and Godard and the people who just like have a real sense of cinema. and when they're making their movies, like that is all there. This is a movie that's kind of, the title makes you think it'll be a spy movie or something, right? Mm-hmm, it's called The Secret Agent. It's not quite a spy movie. It's kind of like, it's like a resistance movie. It's a movie about people trying to survive under an oppressive and fascist regime. It stars Wagner Mora from Narcos. He was also in Civil War as a guy who comes back to his hometown, and he's trying to like just settle things so he can leave with his son. Some bad stuff went down with his wife and his family. He's being targeted by the government. He's just trying to basically get out, but he is living and working with a group of other people who are also being targeted by the government, and they're just trying to figure out ways to escape Brazil, basically. And what I kind of love is this is just like just kind of a hangout movie. It is a hangout movie with the threat of oppression kind of hanging around these people, and they are doing things that are a little like secretive, like they're talking to people who are very covertly who are trying to accomplish certain tasks. There are shootouts, there's things that happen, you know, like that. But it's not really a traditional spy movie. Really, it's a movie that delivers like a real sense of place, which is kind of interesting. It's set in 1977 Brazil. And maybe it's just because I was born in South America. I have a lot of family in Guyana, right above Brazil. I feel like this movie really captures that vibe of what things were like back then. I recall seeing pictures of the 70s and 80s, and even when I visited South America in the early 90s, like it was a very, it's very particular kind of way people live, the way the cities were structured. This feels like a really interesting slice of time. Like it's capturing 1977. I don't know how they got like the old cars, the old style. They rebuilt some of the classic movie theaters in Recife, which is the city where the director grew up, and kind of the movie theaters that he loved growing up. So he had a excuse to do that. This is a movie that's about all sorts of things. It's about resistance, but it's also kind of about cinema and the love of cinema. It's a beautiful looking film. I would say if you go in to check this out, this is not a plot heavy film. This is not Ocean's 11 or like a Bourne spy movie or something. And this is not an action heavy film. This is a movie about people trying to survive in a world that doesn't want them there. And I found it really powerful. It does some really interesting things when it comes to like how different generations look at violence and look at like how their government behaves, and also how different generations see how things affect their families. I'm not going to spoil too much here, but it does some really interesting things. Also, speaking of guys who like B movies, like this is a guy who just for one section, he will just like do a really fun B movie segment, which is just kind of silly. Udo Kier, the famous B movie actor who is in Bacurau, is also in this for one scene and is incredible. I learned yesterday that Udo Kier passed away.
Yeah, passed away.
R.I.P. Udo Kier, a guy who is, whenever I saw him in genre movies, I kind of loved seeing him. He was in the original Blade. Dude popped up in Ace Ventura. I was going
to say, what's your favorite Udo Kier? Like when you think of Udo Kier, what comes to mind? For me, it is, I think Blade is up there for sure.
Blade is up there.
Yeah.
Blade is up there, but dude popped up in Ace Ventura. Dude pops up like all over the place.
Yeah.
People are recommending all of his, a bunch of his recent films that I need to check out, but I love him. And it is kind of fitting. Like I saw this movie, I was like, oh man, Udo Kier gets this one scene to really bite into things and be very, very cool as somebody who had escaped Nazi Germany. And then the next day I found out he passed away. So that's, I don't know, that just kind of hit me in a way too. Dude will be immortalized in cinema forever because of roles like this and because of movies like this. Anyway, that's The Secret Agent. If you liked Bacurau, if you like movies that are very like muscularly made, I'd say like it's a movie that uses cinema to its full extent. It's using all sorts of camera tricks. It's using all sorts of techniques that feels very alive, but it's also, it has a political message. It's using art as a political statement, which is something I really appreciate about Bacurau. Check this out. It's kind of long, but it's worth the ride.
Very cool. This is out in theaters here in Portugal right now.
Yeah.
And my wife was planning to go watch it in Portuguese, but fortunately I got screeners.
Probably
for
no subtitles for that one, right? Because it is in Portuguese. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I did get screeners for this, so I think I will be checking out the screener version. Looking forward to it, though. I've heard great things. The movie is The Secret Agent. And is this out in the United States right now?
I believe it's out in limited release.
It might be out. It might be until December when it's out, but I'm not exactly
December
sure.
5th. December 5th.
December 5th in the United States, but the movie is The Secret Agent, and it's something that Devendra really enjoyed this week. Jeff Cannata, hit us up with something you've been watching this week.
Well, I went to see a movie with the family. Took the whole family. Even my mom was in town. So the five of us went to go see Zootopia 2 because I am willing to try everything. Thank you, David.
It's a new song this time.
New song. this comes complete with a new Shakira bop. And it is a bop.
Nice.
She's not trying real hard with the title. It's just called Zoo, right?
Yeah. But it's cute. It's like, it's
cute.
She goes,
it's
cute. Zoo, ooh, ooh. It's very fun. Big fans of the Zootopia in my household. My daughter was counting down the sleeps until we got to go see Zootopia 2. She went to the theater with her Judy Hopps stuffy that she often sleeps with. Big fans of Zootopia in our house. I've watched that movie more times than I'd like to count. So we were amped, and I gotta say, Zootopia 2 lives up. In fact, for my money, better than the first. I think this is an improvement on the first movie. Very fun, still has the great dynamic between the I mean, it's basically doing the same thing again. It's a new caper. It's a new, you know, the Zootopia is a movie about an overeager bunny who wants to be the very best detective, very best crime stopper in the police department, and hooks up with this kind of pseudo-reformed fox who helps her solve the case in the first movie. Second movie, new case that is threatening the city, new twists, new bad guys, new stuff. But basically, we're kind of doing the same thing over again. They have to prove themselves again as investigators. So it's not, you know, reinventing the wheel in any way. It's not trying to be anything more than what you would expect. But I think it does a great job of not feeling simply like a regurgitation of the first movie. It's so fun. There's so many wonderful nods to the first. I mean, I think it does a great job of bringing back beloved characters and cameos of moments from the first, nods to the first movie, but not making that feel tired or strained, I guess is the word I'm looking for. And the thing I like most about this sequel is, you know, the first movie, so we have a city called Zootopia, or Zootropolis, I guess it's now. I realized Disney didn't have the name Zootopia in Brazil, so Zootropolis is how it's referred to in some parts of the world, which is crazy.
Yes, I'm in Portugal, and it is called Zootropolis. I think there's a trademark, right? There's another thing called
Brazil.
Zootopia.
Yeah, there's an actual zoo in Brazil called Zootopia. Anyway, this is what I learned.
Denmark, I believe, also has Zootopia, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway. Yeah.
Maybe I'm misremembering. Anyway, the point is very confusing when it comes up on your Apple Music as
Zootropolis.
Try everything from Zootropolis. My daughter could not stand it. What? What is happening, Father? This is the wrong song. No, I said. Try everything.
No, it's a complex trademark dispute, daughter. Yeah.
Sit down. Let's discuss it. The thing I like most about this sequel is that the first movie, of course, you know, they have. This is a city made up of different zoo animals and different zoo animal biomes, I guess is the word. They do a lot of wonderful kind of gags around that. I think they absolutely double and triple down on the gags and puns, and I am here for it. This is my kind of joy.
Yes.
You know, little throwaway jokes, little moments, little, you know, something you just see in the corner of a frame. Little 4 seconds of something, not even like 2 seconds of something that, oh my gosh, that's, they're doing Hungry Hungry Hippos. Oh my God, that's hilarious. They're doing this. There's a sign on the, a road sign on the freeway that says New Jersey, but it's GNU. You know, it's like everything is, it's that stuff all the time. And I love it, as you might guess. And I think the new areas that we, there's like a, sort of a swampy kind of bayou area that they go to in this movie that I think is designed really in a really fun way. It has lots of really cool ideas in it. So, you know, and the story, the movie is feels a little long-ish for kids. It's like pushing at 2 hours almost. But my daughter got a little antsy toward the end. Mm-hmm. But I think overall, if you like the first Zootopia, there's so much to like in this one. It's really fun. The animation's great. Total delight at the movie theater, Zootopia 2.
Looking forward to
it. Nice. Yeah, I'm looking forward to checking it out. Sadly, I will not be able to see this one because at least not until it's out in video on demand because they subtitle all movies in Portugal except for the kids' movies. Mm-hmm. They dub over the kids' movies. So if I went to go see it, it would be en Portuguese. And I would not yet understand it. But one day I will be able to.
This is the kind of movie that you might be able to still
get. Yeah, I was going to say, like, if I didn't understand about 80% of what's being said, actually, no, sorry, 95% of what's being said.
I think you'd still get the story. I think you'd miss a lot of fun things, mm-hmm, but... you know, I think you'd probably still get the story.
Gist of it. Yeah. Okay.
But part of it is like you're here for Jason Bateman as a sexy fox man too. So
yeah, he's great.
That's a big part of it.
I don't think we should actually do this, but I did have this idea of like, uh-huh, what if you two saw Zootopia 2 and then I saw it in Portuguese and then we reviewed it together. Like what would that be? Fun. What would that be like?
What did you think of the plot when you couldn't comprehend anything?
I mean, because what I would...
That could be cool.
What I would probably do in that scenario is just immediately, or probably before or after, read the plot on Wikipedia, right? I would just kind of read it and understand.
You get the gist.
But you don't even need to, I don't think. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, and that could be...
I think you'll get it.
You'll get
everything. Yeah. Like the basics of what's happening. Did you guys ever have to do this? Like just sit through foreign language movies with no subtitles and just kind of... Try to figure out what's happening.
I've never done that.
Really?
Yeah.
I did that all the time as a kid. Yeah.
Supposedly, I've heard that's how people learn English. They come here and they just watch, you know, American TV and they pick it up. And I'm like, that is amazing. That's amazing.
It's wild. But when I was a kid, like at least in the 90s, like my parents would watch Indian movies and they didn't have subtitles, but we would just like sit and watch them and try to figure out what's happening and listen to the songs. But also, again, I look at the kids who have anime in wide release theaters. I had to sit there on my like satellite dish. Occasionally NHK would come in and we'd get Dragon Ball Z some nights. No subtitles. Just watch Dragon Ball. I'm trying to figure out what's happening. I spent a lot of my childhood watching stuff like that. So it's not out of the question. You'd get something out of it.
The thing you'd miss is, like, you know, like Davinci was saying, a great Jason Bateman performance. Mm-hmm. Kihei Kwan is in this. Andy Samberg. Patrick Warburton joins the cast. Mm. Danny Trejo. Ooh. And best of all, in my opinion, David Strathairn is
in this movie.
That's for you. They cast him for you.
Who cast David Strathairn in this kids movie? Because he is like, I'm David Strathairn and I'm an actor. And I don't know what we're doing in this kids movie, but I'm going to do this like I am, like it's good night and good luck, baby.
Good for him.
Is David Strathairn just seeing his friends get yachts and extra houses? Like, guys, how's this happening? Because I know you're not in that many movies that are like voice acting. You don't even have to go anywhere. You just sit in the booth.
Stay in your pajamas, David. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I am really looking forward to seeing this. I love the first one. Weird delay, right? Like, it's been 9 years. Long.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And the first movie did well. It wasn't like the first movie was a bomb or anything like that. It did well. And so I guess sometimes you just need to take a while to find the right idea.
My take on this, and you may disagree, but my take on this is that you can tell how long this baked. Like, it does feel like a movie that wasn't rushed. It feels like a movie where every little bit was cared for, and there's a lot of extra stuff that's jammed into the corners of the frame that's, you know, this feels like a movie that they really cared to make good, and it is good in my opinion.
Wonderful.
I was gonna say they didn't really do much with this like franchise, but there was a TV series. I just heard nothing about it, but the TV series is from 2022.
Yes.
Zootopia Plus on Disney.
They're
Plus,
pretty good too. They're like little shorts in the universe. Yeah.
So not a full TV series.
No, they're more like little bite-sizey kind of.
Jeff is familiar with every single piece of Zootopia media that exists.
That's not false.
Well, that's Zootopia 2, aka Zootropolis 2. If people are interested in seeing that weird review idea that I mentioned, let us know. Where I watch the movie in Portuguese, and they, you know, I don't think we could do that on a regular basis, but maybe like once or twice a year, we might be able to do something like that.
For Zootopia, sure.
Yeah. So yeah, let us know at slashfilmcast@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I want to talk about a movie called If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You, which is not a forgotten subtitle for Dan Trachtenberg's new Predator movie. Yeah. Actually,
not a message I send Dave every day.
Yeah. It's actually a drama written and directed by Mary Bronstein. And I posted the poster of this movie on Blue Sky, and many people pointed out this movie has one of the most random ass cast lists ever. Rose Byrne, Conan O'Brien.
In a significant role, apparently.
And ASAP Rocky.
Walk into a bar.
Yeah. ASAP Rocky's agent's doing the Lord's work this year for him.
ASAP Rocky has had a big year cinematically. Yeah. I do think this movie is, you know, not only a better use of his skills, but also a way better film. I mean, I gotta say, I think this movie is incredible. The way people have described it is this is like if Uncut Gems, but for being a mom. That's kind of what it is. Instead of your...
Oh, I call that Tuesday in my house.
Well, you know, it's funny you mention that, Jeff, because I have to say, you know, I'm gonna take this all the way. I'm gonna rewind the tape like many months, you know. Jeff Cannata came to Seattle to hang out not too long ago, right? We went to go see the WNBA game, Seattle Storm.
It's like a year ago now.
Yeah, a year ago. Wow.
Pax. Yeah.
Devendra's been here a couple times for tech stuff because Microsoft's a big company, you know. And every time we all hang out, it's like, you know, I wish we could hang out more often because even though we do this podcast every week, we don't really spend very much time together in real life. Because we live very, very far apart. So anyway, I wanted
to... So Dave's solution to that was to move farther away.
Make them come to me. Yeah.
I mean, I'm probably closer to Devendra now by miles. But anyway.
I don't know. How does that work?
Yeah. Anyway.
You're over an ocean instead of over a country, but yeah.
That's right. So all that said, I'm saying that to say, hey, wish we could hang out more often. All that said... I do get a little bit, I do get some bips and bops of the guys' life when we are talking before the show. But it's an incomplete picture. You know, like, it's not like I feel like I get a full sense of what your lives are like. I only hear, you know, a little bit that seeps through in the pre and post show and, you know, pre and post After Dark podcast time periods. But what little I do hear leads me to believe that this movie... it's what Jeff's life sounds like as he describes it. Let me put it that way. When I'm watching this movie, I'm like, this feels like how Jeff's life sounds when he talks about it.
Utter chaos, bookended by miseries.
So does that mean it's a good idea for you to watch it, or you already live it so you don't need to watch it? I don't know.
Well, on the David Chen misery scale... Because that's how we used to judge these things. How miserable is this?
10 movie? Out of 9 or 10.
Oh
out of 10.
Boy!
It's on the
10 scale. So that's like the guy that's
already
that
waiting.
Feel pain talking to you about the bee stings. You know.
I mean, okay, like you know, like a Requiem for a Dream would probably be a 10 out of 10. I don't think this is quite there.
Okay.
But this is like a 9 out of 10, and I will say that.
Wow.
And I will say that I was not sure if I could watch this all the way through. In one sitting, I thought to myself, I might need to take this in bursts because it's so stressful.
So don't watch with my wife, is what you're saying.
This woman,
I got to tell you, Dave, I got a text from our mutual friend Danish Syed, who was like, Jeff, here's a couple of things I know to be true. One is you should watch this movie.
Really?
Two is Dave and Devendra are going to tell you not to watch this movie.
Oh, wow.
We'll see who your real friends are.
No, Jeff. I'm not. Yeah. I mean, I'm giving you the choice, Jeff, of saying, hey, I think there's a lot in this movie that would resonate with you, but you should decide. Like, in my opinion, it's a trade-off. It's like, do I want to experience stuff that I already experience all the time? or do I want, or do I want to feel seen by someone? Right? Like, how do you weigh those things against each other? It's hard. It's hard.
It's hard.
And I will say, you know, I just want to acknowledge again, I only have an incomplete picture of Jeff's life. I only hear what he talks about, you know, in the pre and post show period. But based off of that, I would say that there is a lot here that you will find to relate to, Jeff.
Is it the kind of is it the kind of thing where, I mean, you didn't see what was that movie, The Wolf Mother? What was that movie that last year?
Night Bitch, I think you're talking
Night
about.
Night Bitch.
Yeah. I started watching it and I thought
much more offensive title.
Yeah,
Wolf Mother.
I started watching it and I did not like it. I actually, that was a movie, that's one of the rare movies I just stopped watching because I was like.
I did not like it either.
Really? I thought you praised it in the, anyway, go
I
ahead.
Think, I thought it, you know, I didn't like the experience of watching it, but
I see.
That's what I'm trying to relate to this is like.
I see. Well, when I started watching it, I thought this metaphor is so thuddingly obvious. I do not wish to participate in this movie further.
Yeah.
I'm done. This, I would say, what, in my opinion, elevates it above a movie like Night Bitch is it is such a visceral experience in the same way that Uncut Gems is visceral, where it's like, always like you're running against the clock, like there's something going wrong at any given time. You don't know what's happening. How do you balance all these elements of your life? And also, Rose Byrne is phenomenal in this. This is best actress Oscar material. This is like, she should get the Academy Award for best actress for her performance in this movie. It's ridiculously good, in my opinion. It's layered, it's complicated, it evolves throughout the film. So I would say worth seeing just for that performance alone.
I plan to watch this. My question is whether I should bring my wife along to watch this or not. Like, is it the kind of thing you could watch and go, oh, I recognize myself in that, or my life isn't so bad because of that, or is it the thing you come out the other end of it and you're like, I am utterly depressed.
What kind of night do you want after the movie? I think that's the question you have to ask.
I mean,
yourself.
I will say, you know, there's sometimes people watch a movie, they say, oh wow, that movie emotionally destroyed me. You know, they'll say that movie emotionally destroyed me. And I was thinking, is that true for this one? It's not quite true. It's like, you know how when you describe a movie as like fraying your nerves, my nerves are fried, right?
Yeah.
That's how I feel after. I destroyed my nerves. I'm so tense for so much of the film that I'm just done. I'm done. Like, I'm exhausted after watching the movie.
Okay.
You know?
That doesn't sound so bad. I can handle that. It's the like, and also, you know, everyone's dead at the end or whatever.
it's like. Well, I can't. I'm not going to spoil it.
Yeah, I don't want you to. But I you know, the idea of, I'm using that just as an example, not like a plot point for the movie, but as an example of, you know, we go through something and then also it's, you also feel shitty about yourself.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I, you know, that's not, I will say that's not how I felt. Like, there's another movie, Jeff, that we're going to be talking about in the next week or two that puts you through a lot. And I'm like, I don't know
and
if that was worth it.
Exactly.
I don't know if that was worth it.
Exactly.
And I do not feel that way about this one.
Okay.
I do not feel that way.
See, that's why I want to watch it.
Like when I got to the end, I was like, wow, that was extremely stressful. But also I felt like it was kind of worth it. I felt like the movie had something interesting to say. And I felt like it said it in a very interesting way. And Rose Byrne is so good. Like, it's such an amazing performance. There's stuff where it's like heartbreaking, but also funny at the same time. Like, she is, there's like scenes in this movie that I'm just like, have seared their way into my memory.
Wow.
And it's because of how good Rose Byrne is in it. So
seems like a movie you don't want to watch at an AMC theater because heartbreak feels good in a place like that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Anyway, If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You. This is available on video on demand right now. Real contender to be my top 10 of the year. I think it's well done. And Rose Byrne, you just got to see her in this. You got to see her, guys. Okay. That is another thing I've been watching this week. Let's take a break for a sponsor. We'll be back with more of what we've been watching right after this.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Devendra Hardwar, hit us up with something you're watching.
Yeah, I saw the French animated film Arco, directed by Hugo Bienvenu. I don't think it's actually hitting America until like early 2026, maybe in some limited theaters. But I would say go look at the trailer for this thing, because the thing I will say about this movie is that it is beautiful. You can clearly see that like Miyazaki is a major influence.
So yes.
This feels like a French take on Miyazaki, but also there's a bit of Ghost in the Shell in there. I'm going to say some things to you guys.
Well, like, first it reminded me a lot. I also saw Arco.
Uh-huh.
It reminded me a lot of Mars Express, which is a movie I recommended a couple weeks ago. Another, I think, French animated film, very heavily anime inspired.
That also looks very Ghost in the Shell inspired too. But
Right. And I think Mars Express is better film than this one, but they're both good. And this movie, the one phrase summary of Arco is, if Studio Ghibli made a hard sci-fi movie, basically, is kind of...
Sure.
You know, that's one
also, can we convince Studio Ghibli to make a hard sci-fi movie? That sounds amazing.
I agree.
Not how they roll.
You get something that looks and sounds a lot like Arco. Anyway, go ahead, Devendra.
I'm going to say things to you guys. You will understand this because you've seen the movie, but this is a movie about a kid who dresses in a rainbow outfit that can fly. Also, his house is on a tower pedestal above the sky, above the clouds. He lives above the clouds in like a bubble house. The rainbow suit lets him fly. The rainbow suit also lets him travel through time. He travels through time to another future, not as far future, like a 2075 future, where climate change has completely ravaged the world. So there are like normal looking neighborhoods, but to survive the hellscape of weather, buildings pop up these bubbles to like just protect the houses whenever there's extreme weather. So you're going from one super far future to another far future to like, this is a movie filled with ideas. The sheer amount of ideas in this movie is stunning. And I think it's really cool. It's a great kids movie. It's about a kid who travels back in time basically to another world and is trying to figure out how to get back home. I watched it with my kids. They were just like enraptured with the animation, enraptured like how beautiful this movie looked, because it is looks like hand-drawn animation with a lot of like digital effects to it, but there's just a lot of detail. Like there's things clearly from the Ghibli movies. Like there is kid falling through the sky from Castle in the Sky. There is naturalistic shots of nature from pretty much every Miyazaki movie. There's a bit of Totoro in here. There's a bit of Princess Mononoke. But then on top of the naturalistic stuff, it can do like technology, because there's robots in this other future. It's full of ideas. And I think it's really, really compelling. I don't think it quite like sticks the landing for whatever story they're trying to tell. But I think the ideas are really compelling, and it brings up some just like that idea, right? It doesn't explain this world to you, but you see these houses in bubbles. There's an incredibly damaging storm happening right outside the bubbles. Everybody's in their backyard just like chilling out like it's a normal day because they don't have to worry about the weather. And it presents a society of like, oh man, I could see us doing this in 50 years, where we have robot helpers doing all the work too, and we are just like trying to protect our houses from climate change. And also, shit's so bad the parents can't even be home to take care of their kids. So like, I think one of the more like haunting aspects of this movie is it's that little boy finds this little girl. She is home with her like infant sibling. The only person in the house taking care of them is a robot, because their parents work in the city and can only like remotely talk to them via holograms every night. Like that sort of thing. There's just ideas floating in this movie that are kind of like, oh, that's kind of cool, but kind of heartbreaking too. Very sad about like what that state of society is. I adored this movie. I just feel like if they had a little more time to cook, there's more they could have done in the ending. There's more that could have like really cemented this thing and made it more of an emotional hit than I think it really is. But it is stunning to look at, and I enjoyed watching it. So yeah, if you can see Arco in the theater, I'd highly recommend it.
I feel almost identically to how Devendra feels about this movie. It's a good movie. I would recommend checking out Arco whenever you have a chance. But yeah, it doesn't quite have the emotional wallop that it wants to. And it has just tons of amazing ideas. So
many ideas.
Worth checking out. Yeah. Beautiful movie. Very cool ideas. Very cool concepts. Very solid movie. So Arco is the name of the movie. Devinger and I both watched it this week as part of our consideration of end of year movies. Jeff Cannata, something you've watched this week.
Well, my wife and I watched all of season two of a show that we very much enjoyed season one of. It is called Nobody Wants This. And this is a romantic comedy that follows a rabbi who falls in love with a non-Jewish girl who has another thing going for her, though. She's a podcaster.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Oh, the noblest of... Oh, by the way, I didn't say. There's a podcaster in Zootopia, too, as well.
Oh, of course. Of course.
You got to keep Podcast Watch on the show, you know.
Now,
the,
was it a positive depiction in Zootopia, too, or was it kind of...
It is the way every podcast is depicted on screen these days, friends. It is
incredibly
there's a mystery. There's a mystery out in the world, and there's people who know stuff. Who are the people trying to get it out to the people? Oh, it's the podcaster. Oh, we got to go talk to the podcaster because they have information that nobody else has. They're doing the investigative work, and they're a little weird, and they're a little reclusive. But they've got information. It's what podcasters are in the popular media for some reason.
Yeah, we aren't constrained by the standards and practices of
they're getting it out traditional to the people.
Of legacy media.
That's right.
So
we can speak truth that to won't power. Lie to you, podcasters.
Yeah,
that's true. And absolutely. Honestly, looking at the state of legacy media right now, you probably have better luck with the podcasters. Looking at a lot of things,
but you know, it never ceases to amaze me how pervasive podcasting is in media as a profession or as a pastime, I guess.
Yeah, it's a nice shortcut, right? Because people already have lots of connotations with podcasting. Right?
Sure.
So you say they're a podcaster, it's like they have 10 adjectives flood into their head, most of them very, very negative. So
that's right. Very few of them positive. But then you have a show like Nobody Wants This, where Kristen Bell and her sister play podcasters, and every scene of them podcasting bears no resemblance to how it actually would work, or like the audio quality of their podcast would be atrocious.
Kristen Bell has never watched her husband actually produce his very successful podcast. She has no idea what goes on.
Wild to me how and there's like constant interruptions while they're like I don't know how they would edit this thing into any any thing that would work.
Oh, but now you're with me, Jeff, because when I had this complaint around Only Murders in the Building, you were saying I was being too nitpicky. No. You cannot just talk to a microphone that's hanging in the middle of an apartment, folding papers in front of you while you check through your notes. That's not good audio.
Interesting people. How you pick and choose, Jeff. Interesting how you pick and choose, Jeff.
Well,
good to know.
I'm actually not mad at this show either. I just like seeing myself reflected back at me, guys.
Yeah.
I just want to be loved. Anyway.
I just want it done accurately, as it was in that Godzilla movie, right? That Godzilla movie did it pretty well, actually.
Oh, yeah, perfect. Totally. Spot on.
Totally.
The best.
No notes.
That's what a conspiracy
among
podcast
is. Among
like.
The best.
Living in a shitty apartment with the actual hardware that you would use to produce a podcast. That's how you do it.
Or the new Ghostbusters movie where they have a guy who's like literally his name is
Podcast.
Pods or something stupid.
His name is Podcast, Jeff.
Yeah, Podcast. It's Podcast.
How could you forget this? His
I
name is Podcast.
Blocked it out. All right, so Kristen Bell, Adam Brody. I talked before in season one, when I talked about season one, they're just electric chemistry to the point where like they both have significant others. They both have spouses. And if I was their spouse watching this, I'd be like, what? That's a little bit too much
they
chemistry.
Have much more a spouse than what I see from Kristen Bell and her husband, who I think she posted like much more chemistry, because at one point she posted like, oh, this is why he jokes about killing me sometimes or something. they have a weird relationship.
Well, Adam Brody's wife is in season two of Nobody Wants This as like an annoying, like, it's so funny. I was like, that's your actual wife and you're just getting it. But I did not find
it's called acting, Jeff.
I'm not familiar. Not familiar. We loved season one. We have watched all of season two. I don't think season two is as strong as season one. There's still a lot to like. It's very charming show with lots of really lovely jokes. I think there's some funny stuff. It's playing the same playlist again in that, hey, it's hard for somebody who is a devout religious person in a devout religious community whose job requires this devout religious stricture to
an actual rabbi, right?
So, yeah, an actual rabbi who's like, you know, super into being a rabbi and has aspirations to ascend the ladder of professional rabbihood. And he's, you know, theoretically in this long-term relationship, potential, you know, permanent relationship with somebody who's not religious at all. And this is the central sticking point of season two. It was a central sticking point of season one as well, but here it gets elevated even more. And you know, it's a romantic comedy. So it's, you know, it's got some, the season is built like in a three act structure, and I won't reveal anything, but it's the lovely characters. It's the fun, charming dialogue. It's funny stuff. There's more of the side characters, I think, in this season than in the first season. And I really enjoy the side characters in this show. Timothy Simons and Jackie Tone play a couple that I find very, very funny in the show. Justin, is it Lupe? I think she's from Succession. You remember her as the sort of call girl turned wife in Succession. Mm-hmm. She's great in this show. You know, there's Stephen Tobolowsky makes an appearance.
Yes.
As a rabbi.
Nice.
Also. So we really like it. I think my wife and I both agreed this was a kind of a step down from season two, but season three has already been green lighted. So,
season one, you mean? Step down for season one, right?
Yes, season three has already been greenlighted, so that will happen, and we will continue watching it because you know, I think Adam Brody and Kristen Bell are just lovely humans to watch on screen, and mm-hmm. so much of the supporting cast is charming and funny. So easy recommend for me if you're not watching.
I've seen some of season two. I definitely hear you, Jeff. Like, it does feel like a step down. It's nice to have something that really captures the energy of Adam Brody again. Because like Adam Brody in the OC, like I was like, this guy is going places. This guy's going to be in a whole bunch of things. And he's been in a couple movies and a couple shows, but it's like, it's never really hit it for him. So despite I don't feel like they can do much with this premise, but it really rests on this cast that we just like these people.
That's very true. And the you know, the whole thing is like, is she going to find religion? Yeah. Is she going to find religion? And the whole season I was like, man, I hope that the solution isn't just that she finds religion. It just felt like such a simple solution. And they, to their credit, they come up with a very lovely ending to this season that I thought really landed the plane in a beautiful way. So kudos for that. And we'll see what season three brings.
Cool. That's Nobody Wants This on Netflix, and it's something that Jeff Cannata has been watching this week. All right, couple final things to mention in what we've been watching. I had a chance to check out a documentary called Thoughts and Prayers on HBO Max. And this is a documentary about the school shooting preparedness industry in the United States, which has grown to over $3 billion at last count.
And you're just like laser focused on finding the most disturbing things to watch. Right?
Yeah, no kidding. Like,
how bad is the state of our society? Let's see what schools are doing to deal with this problem that America will not touch.
Yeah. Thoughts and Prayers, How to Survive an Active Shooter in America. That's the name of the documentary. Mm-hmm. Overall, I got to say, I think the documentary is very well done. It's beautifully shot, in my opinion. And it essentially is just a series of little vignettes. It's just like, here's a person that does a GTA-style simulation of what a school shooting is. Here's a school that did an actual drill in real life where, like, people dressed up as wounded people and, you know, they went through that. You know, here's a person that makes a bulletproof backpack. You know, like, it just kind of gives you these little, like, every snapshot, like, lasts, you know, anywhere between 5 and 15 minutes. It just gives you these little glimpses of what it is. And I guess I just have two observations watching this film, which I would recommend for basically anyone who either lives in America or knows somebody who lives in America. Two observations are, number one, when we think of school shooting drills, which is, hey, let's pretend there's a school shooter. What do we do in that scenario? We think often of the kids who will be probably permanently traumatized as a result of doing those. Mm-hmm. I think something on the order of like 95% of kids have had at least one school shooter drill or something along those lines. And so that's the like primary association is, oh, I can't believe we're doing this to our kids. What this documentary shows you is that it's not just the kids. Like it kind of reverberates outwards like a fractal, like so many different people mm-hmm. are impacted by it, because now there's a thing where I think in something on the order of like a dozen states, teachers are allowed to arm themselves and defend their kids from school shooters. And so it kind of interviews some of these teachers, and you can tell many of them are really upset about the idea of needing to train with a firearm so that mm-hmm. they can defend their kids from an active shooter. And in many ways, like they're also being traumatized. Like they're also,
they're definitely being traumatized. You know, anybody like in that environment that has to basically, your job is protect kids, because we live in a society that can't stop guns.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all traumatic. It's all the way down. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. So, and you can tell like they're very upset. Like they don't want to be doing it. They're not like, oh yeah, I'm so excited to be here learning how to use a gun and kill someone. Like, no one's excited about that. Like, but they are doing it because they think they have to do it. And their reaction is, I am the one that's going to have to protect. Like, if I'm the last one protecting my kids, I'm going to do it. So they mm-hmm. feel like they have to do it. And of course, it's very upsetting that they feel that way. You get a sense of really the scale of this industry. People are selling glass that doesn't get pierced by assault rounds, and people are selling backpacks, and people are selling tables that convert, like classroom tables that convert into bulletproof shields and so on, like all this stuff. And you just really get a sense of, oh wow, like that is a lot of money to spend on this, right? Like that could have gone to other things that, you know, are more worthwhile. And it's just wild to watch this movie while I am not in the United States, because I'm literally just in a place where no one needs to worry about that. Like, people just don't need to deal with it.
Yeah. They're done with all their societal violence.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but it's like, but
I mean, as an empire.
Yeah, as an empire. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that it really, I think before the dawn of the internet, their like American exceptionalism was a really easy myth to believe in, because, of course America is the greatest, and oh, things mm-hmm, are this mm-hmm. way because of freedom, and it has to be this way. But it really does feel kind of cult-like watching it from another country where people think, oh, this is the way people talk about it in the movie. This is the way it is. It has to be this way. So we have to do something to prepare against, you know, it's like, it doesn't have to be that way, right? Like people mm-hmm. don't have to live like that in at least in the abstract, right? I'm saying, obviously the political reality makes it so, but anyway, it's just like a kind of interesting experience to watch, because it's like, oh wow, people really feel like they have to live this way. And then I'm in a place where that's literally not happening, where they don't have to do it. So anyway, just some reactions to the movie. I think it's worth watching though, but it's Thoughts and Prayers, and it is available on HBO Max. All right, Devendra, hit us up with one last thing.
Real quick, I have seen Wake Up Dead Man, The Knives Out Mystery, and I just want to say, hey, that's pretty good. That Rian Johnson can make a pretty good movie. Turns out you've not heard that here before on the show. I will say it's probably my least favorite of the Knives Out franchise. I think it is. It's maybe a little too long. It's maybe a little too twisty. I also feel like Rian Johnson probably blew the budget quite a lot on Glass Onion, which was like, let's go to
Private Island.
Yeah. Let's go to Private Island. Let's pretend to be a billionaire. Like, let's have this star-studded cast in that location. This one has a big cast, but it's just like they're in a church in upstate New York. You know, the location. There's no globetrotting. This is not like James Bond, kind of how Glass Onion felt a little bit.
Yeah.
No, it just feels like things are really, really scaled down a bit, and I think you would have some interesting reactions to this, Dave, because it is very much rooted in religion,
yeah,
and Christianity yeah, yeah. in America today. So it is a movie that has a lot on its mind, and I think it's really like it's compelling. Like there's some Rian Johnson's writing is just so spot on, so perfect. Sometimes, like I just cannot wait to rewatch this movie just to relive his delicious dialogue. But yeah, it's a great mystery. Maybe a little too twisty, maybe a little too much. But Josh O'Connor is fantastic. Josh, the entire cast: Josh Brolin, Glenn Close, Jeremy Renner, Andrew Scott, like everybody. It is. This is why I enjoy mystery films. So if you can see it in the theater, because it's in limited release for the next couple of weeks in the U.S., I'd recommend doing that.
Very cool. It's a Wake Up Dead Man, a Knives Out Mystery is the full title. Mm-hmm. And as we have literally given Rian Johnson a hard time about on this very podcast, should have been called the Benoit Blanc Mystery, right? Like that's the way they should have done
it. It's probably but true.
Instead, but they're cowards, and it's a Knives Out Mystery. So anyway... it will be on Netflix in a few weeks. I do anticipate we'll probably have a review for that film when it comes out.
Yeah.
But when it comes out on Netflix, I should say. But anyway, that is what we've been watching this week. Let's get to weekly plugs. Weekly plugs is a part of the show each week where we plug something else we've been making. This week, I want to plug DaveChenTravels.com, which is the website where I'm putting all of my travel vlogs. I just published a new one right before I started recording this podcast about walking over one of the most famous bridges in Portugal, the Pont Louis. It's an incredible structure. It's made by one of the proteges of the guy who designed the Eiffel Tower. Just an amazing piece of architecture, an amazing structure, and go on a couple of other adventures as well. So check that out at DaveChenTravels.com, where you can sign up to get an email every time I publish a new video. Devendra Hardware, hit us up with a weekly plug.
Yeah, check out the Engadget podcast. Our last episode was about Meta's like massive antitrust win and basically a federal judge saying that they don't think they actually do have a monopoly over social media because stuff like TikTok and things exist. I think it's a great conversation. And it's kind of we talk about like what it could mean for future judgments of antitrust. If this does not sound exciting to you, it's worth a listen because it is interesting to see like how regulators are thinking about big tech these days, and this particular decision could mean that like companies can only be judged for what they're doing now versus bad things they've done in the past. And I hopefully that's not going to be the case. But yeah, check out that episode of the Engadget podcast.
You know, guys, I had a thought, just random thought that I will follow up on in like about 30 seconds to a minute from after this. Only an American, I feel like, could have written The Wizard of Oz. Only an American could have written The Wizard of Oz. I don't know why I feel that, but it's just a thought. And just keep that in mind for the next like 2 minutes or so. Jeff Cannata, your weekly plug.
Well, it's almost the holiday season. It's a Thanksgiving week here in the States. That means Black Friday is coming. That means we're starting to think about gift giving, holiday gifts. Might I suggest the very best gift of all? What do you give to the person that has everything? Might I suggest a limerick? A limerick? Oh, where would you get one? Ha ha, you're in luck. Because the Limerick District down on Limerick Row, cameo.com/Jeff Cannata, where we're hard toiling away in the Limerick mines, making limericks all day and night. You can get one for your loved one, for yourself, whatever you like. Check out the 5-star reviews. Tons of people enjoying them. I think this is something that could really delight your loved one. Unexpected holiday gift. Give it a thought. Give it a try. Give it a chance. Cameo.com/Jeff Cannata.
Of course, got to throw a shout out for patreon.com/filmpodcast, where you can sign up to get ad-free episodes, exclusive After Darks, and occasional early access episodes. We never want anyone to donate if it in any way causes them financial hardship. But if you can throw a couple bucks our way, we'd really appreciate it. If you can't, you can always support us by leaving a star review for us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks to everyone who supports the show in any way whatsoever on a weekly basis. We appreciate you. We're thankful for you. And we hope you have a happy Thanksgiving this year. Let's get to our review of Wicked for Good.
I've heard it said that people come into our lives for a reason.
Here's the plan.
I have no plan.
Well, I do.
Oh, thank Oz.
Haven't you heard? I'm the Wicked Witch of the West.
This is the work of the Wicked Witch.
Who can say I've been changed for the better? Because I knew you.
What have you done to me?
Because I knew you. Because I knew you. I have been changed.
Because if he was from anywhere else, he'd be the wizard of 28.3495 grams.
Wow. Wow.
Instead of the Wizard of Oz.
No, I got it.
Or ounce.
I got it.
You got it.
Oh, you don't have to spell it out.
28.34. Okay, anyway. All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our review of Wicked for Good. This is, of course, the follow-up to last year's Wicked Part 1, based off of the musical and the book. Remind me, gentlemen, what were your feelings on Wicked the Musical Part 1 in theaters? Did you guys like it? Yeah,
we loved it.
You liked that one?
Yeah.
Jeff, you're a fan?
Yeah, we were enthusiastic.
We all had a great time with that one. Yeah, Devendra Hardwar, after much anticipation... Much box office hype. The second movie is in theaters now. What did you think of Wicked for Good?
I thought this one was a struggle, guys. I really struggled to stay awake during this movie. It was like a constant battle. I did not expect to like the first Wicked, but I thought John Chu did a great job of like adapting it with really impressive sets. The songs were great. The charisma with the cast was great. The visuals, despite looking artificial, I think the artificialness kind of fit what it was going for. I liked overall that first experience. Problem with this movie is that it just feels like we are taking forever to get anywhere. Like it's moving quickly to really get nowhere. Partially it's because we kind of know where it's going. I've seen the musical, so I kind of know where the ending is going. But also the journey getting there is just not that interesting. Like the songs aren't good. The basic plotting of whatever else is actually happening in this movie didn't feel very compelling. It just felt like it was going through the motions to set up the things you expect from The Wizard of Oz. It just felt like I did not know why I was sitting in the theater, because in my head, I could just kind of complete the rest of the Wicked story. Even if I didn't see the musical, you can kind of have a sense of how things would kind of get to where the actual, the original story was. So yeah, this movie was not for me. I did not like the songs and I thought it was a total slog.
Sorry to hear, Devendra Hardwar. Jeff Cannata, what did you think of Wicked for Good?
Well, Dave, I guess you could say what I thought of Wicked for Good is best summed up in the form of a limerick.
Oh, let's hear it, Jeff.
Still love the design and the craft, but the first one had joy and some laughs. The music's still strong, but this feels overlong, a flat, disconnected back half.
Ooh. Mm.
I agree with Devendra. I also struggled to stay awake. I brought my mom with me because, as I mentioned earlier in the episode, she was in town. Brought my mom with me to see this. She also loved the first one. Also thought this was not that great. We both walked out going, ugh. And it's hard, right? It's a hard thing to do, to take what is the second act of a two-act play, after the post-intermission stuff of a musical, and just make that its own standalone movie. That's a hard proposition, I think. And I don't think it works here. I have not seen the stage musical. I'm very curious about how some of the things I saw in this movie work on stage. I suspect I would like it a lot more on stage.
Yes.
But there's a magic trick that this movie pulls that I suspect you'll want to save for spoilers.
Okay.
I have a lot of thoughts about that.
Yeah.
And I don't think it, I respect the notion of it, the game we're playing.
Right.
But I don't think in the context of this film, it works at all.
Yeah.
And I just think this movie...
I was looking forward to you seeing the movie to
Yeah.
And let me just say, as I was watching it, I was like, oh man, this isn't as good as I thought it would be for Jeff's sake.
Yeah. It's a bummer because I've been on stage. It's pretty spectacular.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the way this is pulled off in the film, it really feels forced. That was the word my mom used when we walked out. I was like, what do you think, Mom? She was like, it felt so forced.
Mm.
And I think, honestly, that's kind of what happens here, is that we force a second entire trip to the movies out of something that was never intended to be that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think it really falls flat. And it's such a bummer because the first movie is such a triumph and has so much. You come out of that movie going, yeah, I can't wait for the second one.
Right.
And then this one just really feels like it is really too long, really too slow. Nothing felt as vibrant and fun. I mean, it's still, love the design, love the world building, the way things are visualized is really spectacular. And the two leads are stunning. Their voices are magnificent. But
it'd be great. Imagine if we put them in a room together occasionally in the second half. That would be amazing.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
But it doesn't happen very often.
I think if they had managed to make a 2 hour and 45 minute movie of the whole thing, it may have been stronger than two and a half hour movies.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. That's all very reasonable, guys. And I have to say, in general, I agree with you. I don't think this is very good. And it's a shame. I have a lot of thoughts, but I'll share a couple before we get to spoilers. Number one, most of the problems with this film can be directly attributed to issues with the actual musical itself, right? So it's it's not like the musical did this so much better and then the movie killed it. Now, I think we are much more willing to forgive it in musical form for a variety of reasons. First of all, like, we don't expect musicals to have super nuanced plotting. In fact, often we go to the musicals because they don't have that, right? And it's extremely exaggerated and over the top, and people are singing all the time, right? And so I think, you know, if I had to assign an issue, I'm gonna go out of the box on this one. I think Wicked Part One, the movie, was too good. That's what I think.
I know it sounds
like I'm being facetious, but like,
no, it's for good.
I think it was too good because John Chu and his collaborators were able to convince us, oh, this would be good in movie form. Like,
this
musical would be good in movie. Like, here is an actual fully realized movie form of Wicked, and it's actually like pretty good.
Yeah.
And
the best songs of Wicked too. Crucial.
Yeah, that's best the thing. First of all, I mean, Wicked Part One had at least four bangers, like just incredible, like, and possibly more depending on how you count them. Like, virtually every other song in that Wicked Part One was awesome, right? And Wicked Part Two, in my opinion, and many other people's opinion, just doesn't have the same quality of songs. There is For Good, that's very good, but like, there is, you know, No Good Deed and a couple of others that people might like, but like, it's not on the same caliber. And I do think that in musical form, we forgive this more because it's like, oh, you expect musicals to take shortcuts.
Yeah.
You expect musicals to be like, oh, he's evil and now he's good. Like, that just is normal in musicals. It does not work as well in movie form. Also, you're not paying for two separate tickets separated by 1 year to go see it in musical form, right? And so those two things, I think, really make Wicked For Good feel like accentuate the flaws in a Wicked For Good.
Can I say another thing that I think works against this movie?
Yeah.
And that is Wicked as a concept is in conversation with The Wizard of Oz.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And The Wizard of Oz, as it is most conventionally known, is not Baum's books. It's the film.
It's the
movie. And when you have a stage musical in conversation with a film, there are certain that dynamic in itself doesn't draw the same comparisons when you have a film in conversation with a film.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, we'll get into this in spoilers, but the way this movie wants to sort of interact with The Wizard of Oz, I think you have more leeway on stage because we know we're not watching a movie.
Right.
We know we're not watching something that exists in the same visual vocabulary and cinematic place.
Right, right. And whereas, here you're making the direct comparison and connection to the movie, right? To
that's
the,
right.
To the Wizard of Oz movie.
You are using the same visual language. You are in the same kind of audience experience that you would be. And so all the places where it is discordant with that in that conversation are greatly exaggerated. Whereas in a stage musical, you're like, wow, it's cool that it's referencing the movie. You know,
right? That's I remember that from the movie. Whereas here, you're like, wait, that doesn't make sense. And also,
that's not how the movie was. You
this
know,
is
that's
a generation. We're a generation of filmgoers that's been trained to be like, wait, that doesn't connect with like, you know, at scene five, act two, he's not wearing that when he enters the shot. You know, like,
but also so, like. I mean, we'll talk about it more in spoilers, but it's like the visual language doesn't sync up, and it doesn't matter if the visual language doesn't sync up on stage because it's different. It's different language.
I don't actually think that part is that big of a deal, but you know, there's other things that are a big deal. Let me just say this, and let's get to spoilers. Which is, I think that there was an opportunity to actually improve some of the components of the musical that wouldn't work on film. And that they did not take that opportunity. And I understand that because they, you know, it's hard. It's hard to do. It's hard to take this second half of the musical and, hey, let's add in more character development. Let's add in more of a payoff for, like, I'll just give an example. There is an entire subplot in the first film about animals being treated like prisoners and, you know, very poorly in this society. They're kind of a proxy for immigrants, I think, essentially. Yeah. And completely nothing is done with that at all in this movie at all. Like,
first
basically
movie had like, it was something that movie was saying that applied to modern life too.
Absolutely.
Like, it felt very
culturally
relevant,
politically relevant. Yeah. Like, if they had really, and they could have spent time developing that out, and they didn't. And they didn't.
Is that
and
in the play?
Like, it not really. Like, what is in the movie is a fairly representative of what is in the musical, right? Like, so
the first movie's animal stuff is in the musical as well.
Yes. Okay. But again, in the musical, it's like much more forgivable because we expect musicals to take shortcuts and, like I'm watching.
And it's hard to have a talking animal on stage.
Right, but I'm watching something incredible, which is like people singing and making music together live, and it's like that's like a key part of watching a musical. Whereas in movie form, yes, the music is good, but now I'm focusing on how does this theme pay off? This theme pay off? How does the plot work in a way that you're not when you're watching a musical? And they could have improved the movie adaptation, but it would have required a lot of work, and instead they ended up, you know, writing additional songs, and I don't think the songs are that good, and I don't, you know, the songs aren't bad, but it's like, I think that was not where they applied their efforts in this movie. I don't think is where the most work needed to go to. And it's unfortunate that therefore the second half is not as good as the first film. I do wonder, Jeff, if we had seen this movie as like one big 3.5 hour long movie, like how we would feel about it. I suspect we would still think the second half is rushed. It would feel rushed, but I think we might be a little more forgiving because we didn't have to pay an extra $15 or whatever. You know,
we're just spending too much time in that part of the story.
Yeah,
I think that's a big thing. Partially, it's that it's sort of like the Game of Thrones situation too, where I feel like a lot of thought was put into the beginning of this. How do we kick this off? How do we get people into this story? And the wrapping up of it. You know, they tried some things, but it didn't feel nearly as compelling.
Yeah, and again, I think it's largely because of the musical. Like, it's all the problems with this movie, I think, can be directly attributed to the musical. And so the flaw is not that they did a poor job adapting the musical. The flaw is that they, or maybe you could say it that way, but like the flaw is that they didn't think through more how bad the second part of the musical is.
To me, that's a poor job of adapting the musical. To me, is the job of adapting the musical.
Fair. Okay. Let's get to spoilers for Wicked for Good, starting right now.
I thought up an ending for my book.
It makes no damn sense.
Compels me, though.
I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end.
When I buy a new book, I always read the last page first. That way, in case I die before I finish, I know how it ends.
You can't handle the truth!
Inconceivable!
I came here to tell you how it's going to begin.
When we first talked about Wicked Part 1 last year, I was thinking, oh, Jeff has never seen this. He's going to be so delighted when it turns out, oh, all these characters are part of the Wizard of Oz. Then I'm watching Wicked for Good, you know, this last week, and I'm watching it, and I'm thinking, man, this doesn't make any goddamn sense. Like, none of this none of this fits in at all. Like, why would the Tin Man be so cheerful in the Wizard of Oz? Like,
yeah,
that doesn't make any sense. Why, mm-hmm. you know, why yeah. would the Scarecrow go along with this at all? I understand there's explanations you could come up with. I'm not saying it's impossible. Yeah.
Well,
but it doesn't like fit in.
No,
you
know,
it's
does
like
not.
You watch it, you're like, oh, I get it now. Like that moment doesn't happen. I don't think.
Right.
Nothing fits. Yeah.
The analogy that I was making is that this should feel like an additive, amazing look behind what was happening off camera during the original Wizard of
right,
Oz, and
right.
my gosh, this changes how I think about it and recontextualizes it, and oh my god, that's what it wants to be doing.
Yeah,
but unfortunately, the way it feels to me is like a production of Noises Off.
Yes,
or even better, I think is something like Back to the Future, or what's the other time travel one that I was thinking of where it's like we have to, or Bill and Ted, that was the other one, Bill and Ted's uh-huh. Excellent, where it's like, okay, we know what needs to happen in front mm-hmm. of the camera, in front of the camera of Wizard right. of Oz, and that's not what really is happening, but right. every time we step out and are in front of that camera, when we're in the timeline of Wizard of Oz, we have to pretend we're completely different people. And it's like, why? What? There's no explanation as to why we need to put up this right. facade of the plot of yeah. Wizard of Oz instead of it being like, oh, this naturally is what was going on. And it infuses more meaning into the things mm-hmm. we already saw. It's like, no, that what you saw is not at all true. But we were pretending the whole time that it was. And it's like, no, that makes Wizard of Oz worse. That
right.
makes, this is all, none of this and it makes sense anymore.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
all of it feels worse for having tried to shoehorn all those things into it.
I agree that that's probably true. And yeah, maybe you could make the argument that it's not trying to be a direct one-to-one to Wizard of Oz, that maybe it's more akin to adapting the books instead of the actual film, but even
well,
then,
it's farther away from the books than it
it's
is
farther.
Movie.
Yeah,
even then,
yeah.
it doesn't
Much
really.
And they're using all the iconography of the movies, other than the silver slippers,
other than like the red slippers, which yeah. MGM has they have copyrighted or trademarked the red slippers.
I like how they're like, let's make them red for a second.
Yeah, let's
that'll,
make them.
Yeah. That'll trick them.
Dancing Ooh. With the Devil.
My,
there,
my mom had a big problem with that.
Mm. Oh, really?
She could not get. Why were they not ruby? Why were the ruby slip? Why were they silver? Why
right.
were they,
that's the whole point. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right, Jeff, that it doesn't. Like, the ideal is you're thinking, oh, like, I actually feel like I had that emotion when I was watching Wicked, per how mm-hmm. you described. I was watching Wicked the musical and thinking, oh, this is so clever. Like, and all this time, all this stuff was going on in the background. Then you watch the movie version. And so I don't know if I just had, you know, brain damage at the time or whatever, but like now I'm watching the movie and I'm like, wait, this doesn't make any sense. Like that's not how the Tin Man would act in yeah, that scenario, yeah. right?
Like the idea that the Scarecrow is in love with the and I kept waiting for them to be like, well, but he doesn't have a brain, so he can't remember it. But they didn't even give that to you. But
yeah.
yes, the Tin Man is like this angry, you know,
yes.
storming the castle,
right.
you know, malcontent. It's like, where was that in the Wizard of Oz? Like, there's
right.
no, there's
no, he's not nowhere in there. And the idea of the idea is, I guess the Scarecrow was maybe pretending that he didn't have a brain, because otherwise, how would he have come up with this brilliant plan with Elphaba to trick everyone.
Why does
I will say, Jeff, I do think it was cool that they never showed Dorothy's face. Like, that was a cool.
I like that as well.
That's cool because you don't want to draw that direct comparison. And
everything is behind something through. The thing. I thought that was actually well done.
Very tasteful.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
But the fundamental notion that Elphaba would even need to keep the secret of her not dying from Galinda doesn't make any sense to me. It's like, why would they not be in on this plan together? She gains nothing by Galinda not knowing that she's alive. Like, she doesn't, I don't understand what she even gains by that.
Yeah.
None of it seems to make any sense.
It's this weird thing where it's like the story of her being evil, she totally buys into it. It's like, okay, people need to believe this, so I have to go through these motions so that this is what the enemy people need, right? It's very Dark Knight of her. The villain people need.
But why?
They must believe this story. Why? I don't know.
Yeah.
There's no explanation given. We're all just trying to get to the credits here, okay?
If you think of every appearance of the Wicked Witch of the West in Wizard of Oz,
right,
it bears no resemblance to any behavior that we witness from Elphaba at any point. Yeah. And it's like,
towards the end, it's the same, I think, pretty similar.
No.
She has her no good deed moment, and then she's like, I'm not going to try to be good anymore, and then she becomes kind of evil for a little bit, you know? So that's...
I didn't even buy that. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the song is awesome, but like, her turning to the dark side isn't really a turn to the dark side in this movie. It never asks you to consider her being genuinely wicked at any given time.
There's no younglings being killed.
And I don't, fine, I'll be what you want me to be, but she's never actually that.
I mean, the problem is that Elphaba has a really satisfying and complete arc in the first part of the movie, right? That's part one. Like, that is the Elphaba arc. It's very good. It's very well done. Yeah. And then it's like the movie really doesn't have anywhere. The story doesn't really have anywhere to go. And, you know, again, it's an issue with the musical, and they did not really do anything to address it.
Or maybe the book. I don't know.
Couple things that I'm a little bit bummed weren't better done in the second half. Again, this is all the musical's issue that was not improved on for the movie. But I feel like the Fierro-Elphaba romance is really underbaked. Like, you get a little bit of it in the first one, and then all of a sudden you're supposed to believe they're like passionately in love in this one, and I didn't quite buy that. Galinda's takeover of the entire city, like hostile takeover of the entire city, I felt like went pretty quickly. So
what about the Wicked Witch of the East? Like, that turn is so rushed.
The sister is just so underserved here. Yeah.
And then And I think that I really wanted to experience this kind of emotional catharsis at the end of the movie during the For Good song, right? These are two people that they've been through so much, and now they're finally saying goodbye, but they're acknowledging that they've made a difference in each other's lives. And it just didn't work for me because the plotting felt so muddled between the two of them until that point. Whereas that was not an issue. The first movie is extremely clear on like where they stand with each other.
Yeah.
I was deeply moved at various points in the first film and just was not moved at all in the second half. Unfortunately.
I know how they could have fixed this. They could have like intercut scenes of like the press carpet stuff between the two leads, because like they have like they're really like gal pals now.
Well,
very, very close.
They have great chemistry, I think, screen. And the issue with the second half of the musical and movie is everyone's separated. Like, everyone is in all these different places. And so, you know, they can't interact with each other. And that was one of the strongest aspects of the first film, is like seeing their relationship develop in the same location. So
I'll tell you, we haven't brought this up, but the Cowardly Lion thing, that kind of just broke my heart of how stupid that was.
Yeah, it's very stupid.
It's like, you're annoyed she let you out of captivity. That's her great crime. That's why you hate her now.
It's the lion from the first movie, Devendra. I don't know if you saw it. It's the lion from the first movie.
He barely looks like the lion from the first movie. I do want to say I like the way they did the final fight between Dorothy and Elphaba in Complete Shadows. Right. Yeah, that was cool. That was cool, interesting. There's some interesting ideas going on here. I also think
the ending is pretty cool. Like there's no in the musical, like you don't see them walk off like that. Like there's no, it doesn't make
the stage has an end.
The stage doesn't open up to Desert Wasteland.
What do we do now? Shall we go to a real desert? Nah, that shit.
So it's cool.
Walk into the volume.
But it's cool. It's a cool concept, and it's a cool like, oh, they're walking off into the sunset. It's very nice. It's like a thing that they can't do in the musical as well as they can in a movie. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah,
I have another big sort of conceptual problem with this whole endeavor. And this is a bugaboo that I have that probably doesn't bother most people. But the entire, like on the most basic level, the concept of this movie is the Wicked Witch wasn't actually wicked.
Right. Yeah.
But the way this plays out is there was a Wicked Witch. It's just Michelle Yeoh. It just it doesn't say, oh, hey, maybe wickedness is in the eye of the beholder. And there's no like actual point being made about, like, the first movie is trying to position it as like, oh, look at all these factors that make us judge someone unfairly and all and it's kind of making it. And then the second movie is like, no, there's a Wicked Witch. You just got the wrong one. It's just, she's wicked as hell. She'll do whatever she can to be wicked. But she's just hiding as Michelle Yeoh, and
I don't know if I agree with that formulation, or if that is what the movie's trying to do. I don't think
it's not trying to do that. It's just just lazy enough to be like, oh no, all the bad stuff is attributed. It still happened, and it's still bad, and somebody still did it. It's just not the person you thought. It's just it's just transposing instead of actually solving that puzzle and saying, hey. Maybe these quote unquote bad things that you saw can be recontextualized, and it didn't come from a bad place, and there wasn't. It's like no, it did come from a bad place. Mm-hmm. It's just this other lady.
Yeah,
it's stupid. Mm-hmm. I think that's lazy, and it doesn't actually do the thing you're purporting to do.
Yeah, yeah. Well, also, yeah, the whole immigrant subplot is like completely dropped, as we said in the first part of the review of like
They have the reintroduction of the goat.
Yeah, the goat.
And I was like, oh, but we're not going to pay. What's his name?
He's not speaking.
Yeah, it's
silent.
He gets no lines. Yeah. I'm sorry, we're not paying him to be in the second movie. What's his name from Game of Thrones?
Dinklage.
Yeah, Dinklage. Thank you.
Yeah.
Overall, no real issues here that weren't in the musical, and also missed opportunity. To really, you know, they're not going to get that many bites of the apple, so to speak, of this, right? Like, they're not going to be like 15 Wicked adaptations, you know, unless.
Well, there are more books.
Lives for another 10,000
years. There
are
more books by the Wicked guy, so they could continue doing those. I am like, I kind of was so grateful when this movie ended. I was like, I don't have to think about Wicked for a long time. I'm just, I'm done. Let's tap out for a little bit because it's a little much. Let's move on to new stories. Man. And also, like, you guys don't have this, but like in New York, like it was still a thing.
Yeah.
It was still like there were always ads for it, there was always posters for it. Wicked never really went away. It just got, now it's more national with this franchise.
Well, I do think it's a great musical, and I do think that Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande are now like, they will be the primary way people know these characters now, which I think is remarkable because they both do a great job. And Cynthia Erivo in particular, like the new Wicked soundtrack is a gift for people who are fans of Wicked, because you have these two incredibly talented vocalists who are now performing these roles, but also it is a full orchestra. In the original Wicked, like, cast recording, it's always, like, very small pit orchestra size. Like,
this
is a full, like, 100, 200-piece orchestra performing these songs in a way that you've never heard them before, in a way that's, like, worthy of the grandeur of them. And so it's not, like, a complete loss or to me or anything like that. I still think, you know, I'm glad that this version exists. But it could have been transcendent masterpiece that everyone loved. And instead, it's just straight up adapting a very flawed second half of the film. of the musical, I should say. So
I almost wonder if they cut back on like the political commentary here as it became more relevant. You know, like there is, we right now have secret police going around this country, arresting people willy nilly. The kind of propaganda machine against others, against immigrants, especially Latino immigrants, is like in full swing. That was kind of the setup of the first movie. We just don't get that here other than the scene of the animals like going away. Yeah.
I was actually going to start, you know, I forgot about this. I was going to start the podcast with like, I can't wait to watch another movie to escape reality where a con man runs the world and people are reporting their fellow citizens for sport. Anyway,
I mean, I will say the song that he has about lying and the bigger the lie.
It's pretty good.
I really enjoyed that in this movie because it's like, man, that is could not be more
it's
on the nose.
Too real. Yeah. Too real. Yeah.
Right. And the point of that, which I think is extremely relevant, is it is not enough to simply know the truth. You have to be able to convince people of the truth. And that, you know, between those two things is a million miles. And that but is
that was his version of I could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and nobody would care. Yeah. Like,
that's right. That's right.
Tyrant's fully aware of their power to manipulate. That is a dangerous thing.
100%.
Goldblum is great. The choreography of that sequence is great. Like, I thought that that moment was a high point for me in the movie.
And I did think the Goldblum stuff kind of lined up well with the original Wizard of Oz movie, right? Like, they're blackmailing him to get the broom. And then she says, hey, you have to leave Oz. And then so he has to make up some reason to get in the balloon and stuff like that. That stuff lined up okay, I thought.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But every, like, I don't know, the fact that he's the man behind the screen in the reveal in The Wizard of Oz is just lifeless because of what we know of him. And I don't know, it's just all.
Yeah.
But the Wizard of Oz was the Wicked Witch's father, guys.
I know.
Come on.
God.
Huge reveal. Huge reveal.
Just.
Does it line up with Oz, the Great and the Powerful? Do those timelines
that's the most
intersect?
Important.
That's what
that's
we
the
need
most
to know.
Important canonical part, yeah. Right?
Is Sam Raimi's coming out of this movie saying, I put years into Oz the Great and the Powerful. No justice for that movie.
I literally don't think I could tell. I watched that movie. I spent several hours of my life. We reviewed that movie on the podcast. I literally do not think I could tell you one thing that happens in that movie.
Would you believe that Zach Braff is in that movie? When last have you said the name Zach Braff?
No.
Every time I watch his commercials.
The T-Mobile guy?
Yeah.
All right. Well, at the end of the day, despite our disappointments with this movie, it is very impressive that John M. Chu made a movie. And that is going to bring us to the end of this week's episode of the Filmcast. Our theme song comes from Tim McEwen from The Midnight. Our spoiler bumper and weekly plugs music comes from Noah Ross, who also edited this episode. With video assistance provided by John Barry and Kurt Mega, next week on the podcast, it's going to be Train Dreams. This is a movie that we have gotten requests for from several people, and it's on Netflix right now as we speak. So we're going to take it easy. We're going to spend time with family, and we're going to be at home watching Train Dreams this weekend in advance of our review next week here on the Filmcast. Thank you so much for your support. Hope everyone has a lovely and happy and safe Thanksgiving. Until next week. They're Devendra Hardwar, Jeff Cannata. I'm David Chen. See you later.
Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints. Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.